your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Last update on the left.
Honestly, if I came for money, I think everyone would know.
I let the rings do the talking.
Yeah, jangle, jangle. Sorry, my bracelet cut your daughter. Shouldn't be trying to get past me in the Starbucks line. It's my bracelet. I don't care. I can make coffee at home, sure. Better coffee than this because of my $1 million coffee machine. But unfortunately, no. I'm here amongst the villagers.
Welcome
Get
to last
out.
Welcome to last update on the left. I'm Marcus Sparks with the
Nepo baby Henry Zebrowski. Yeah, just me, Sydney Sweeney, hanging out with old fashioned Paris Hilton and Kirk Douglas.
Yeah, you're just sitting there on all your that whacking hut money.
Yeah, you're
just sitting there like, oh man, you guys have no idea what kind of inheritance you can get off of NYPD pension.
Yep,
it's actually not that bad.
No, it is.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jersey cops' pension's pretty good.
It's fine, but I mean, at least I know, thanks to my mom, she says, don't worry, your funerals are paid for. It's like, great.
And we're here with Ed Larson, who, as I understand, paid for his mother's funeral.
And my father's.
Wow! You're like an executive producer.
It was, your mother's funeral was the funniest funeral I've ever attended.
Thank you. It was a good one. You know, I had some jokes, you know, we had some moves, had a good time, passed out some Reese's peanut butter cups.
It was awesome.
Yeah, really, honestly,
it was a really good show.
Yeah, bro, it was an awesome fucking funeral.
It really was the best one I've ever been to.
Yeah, it really was. You threw a great funeral.
Lots of pizza and shit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait to get to do another one, and I can't wait till I get to do yours.
Yeah, well, you wait. There's going to be some people dying soon.
I'm really excited. Really getting into the year.
Yeah.
I'm ready for 2024.
Yeah. In June?
I'm ready. Get me out there. I got started at the gym.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, today, the subject that we are revisiting, and this is, I wouldn't necessarily say that this is an update. I would say that another way to refer to this show is not just last update on the left, but last expansion on the left.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I love to playfully expand things with my friends.
Yes. Well, also, you're explaining it to me, so that's good.
Well, yes, we're also explaining all of this stuff. Much of this stuff is brand new to Ed.
So, you know,
we're bringing him in. But yeah, it's kind of a lot like how on No Dogs we'll do like kind of coda episodes to series where, you know, because there'll be cool things that, you know, we'll have to cut out. Like, for example, like one of the cool things that I think we might have to cut out of Can is that the lead singer of Can was also in a German production of Hair with Donna Summer.
Whoa.
And Donna Summer's first ever single was a German version of The Age of Aquarius called Das Wassermann, which translates literally to The Waterman.
That's incredible.
It's a fucking dude. In this version, it's so fucking good. It's Donna Summer. It's like a decade before I Feel Love.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's fucking incredible. That's actually, I may get a little bit more into that.
We're already here.
We're already here.
So yeah, funny. No, you have jumped into the thing you were cutting from No Dogs, and you're putting it onto this show.
And we're probably less to do with it.
And we're going to have to cut this, probably, this time from this episode.
No, this is just something that is a little bit, we're just going to give you a little bit of a freebie. Donna
it's
Summer.
It's already free. I will say, No Dogs is free wherever podcasts you can get them.
That's right. Yeah. Donna Summer, her name actually comes because the name Summer comes from the German man that she married because she lived in Germany for like many, many, many years. She married a man named Sommer. And when her first single was released, it was misprinted as Summer. And so she figured that sounds a lot better. That looks a lot better. And so she was Donna Summer from then on.
Oh, wow. I just thought it was because she was hot.
So was she shot in the head by Ronnie DeFeo?
No, but it's very possible that right before Ronnie DeFeo killed his entire family, he may have been listening to I Feel Love.
Whoa,
he may have been listening to Donna Summer.
He could have been on at the bar when he went and said, oh my God, my family, I almost defecated myself. I love Donna Summer, though.
I love Donna. Donna Summer's incredible.
Yeah, what's not to love?
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's go through. Why don't we, like, how do y'all want to do this? Do we want to just kind of go through the Amityville?
Can you give me a quick
overview? A quick overview. Yeah.
Because when we first,
surprisingly enough, I've never even seen the movie.
Whoa, you've never seen the Amityville
Horror? It's like the one like classic horror movie I've never seen.
It's wonderful. You should really watch it. It's one of the best haunted house movies ever.
Yeah. I'll actually say, I think it's a little overrated.
Whoa! I like it. I'm better at this.
Wow.
I like it. I think it's good. Well, just so you know, when we covered the Amityville Horror back in the day, what we started realizing as we researched, because just to catch you up on before we catch Eddie up, is that when we did that series, partially it was, we were at the time totally convinced that it was one of the most legit hauntings of all time, because that's all we had ever heard. We had heard it from the news. We had heard it from our parents. We had heard it from our kids' friends. It was throughout all of pop culture that the look of that house with the two eyes that look like the two windows that look like eyes, it haunted entire generations and then generations after. And we thought, like, oh, this will be great because we're always looking for good, meaty paranormal stories to tell on the show. And it was for us a very significant story because it was probably one of the first times that we popped open the guts of a story and we realized, like, oh, it's actually not about the haunting at all. It's about the true crime story that's at the center of this.
Yeah. Nothing scary. Scarier than real estate.
Hey. AnnieTunes.com.
But yeah, we really did. Like, I actually remember, like, starting to look into this story and being, like, flabbergasted that the whole thing was kind of a hoax on the part of the Lutzes. I mean, not necessarily a hoax, but rather was blown out so much by the Lutzes, and how this had kind of been common knowledge for many years. But, you know, that's one of the things that we sort of find on Last Podcast Again and Again, is that the myth often persists so much longer than the truth. But, you know, one myth turns into another. And before you know it, everyone thinks Ed Gein's a cannibal when he's not.
Whoa.
Yeah. So to give you a little bit of an overview of what happened before the Lutzes moved in, the story that the Lutzes built upon was the murder perpetrated by Ronnie Butch DeFeo.
Ah, I love a Butch.
Yeah.
I had an Uncle Butch.
How was he?
He's dead.
No, I mean, when he was alive, how was he?
He was a lesbian. Yeah.
He was, honestly loved him.
Yeah.
Loved him. He was great. Super fun. He always gave me a lot of money.
Oh,
Christmas, yeah.
That's good.
He was in the sanitation department management. Good money.
Does that mean that he got like some fun shit off of the sidewalk?
Yes, he always had free weird shit.
Like,
remember
what?
He had a big flat screen TV that he fixed. I always remember that. I always, like, he gave us toys that he got out of the dump.
That's great.
It was awesome. It was all fixed. Yeah, he went and he got it fixed. He's got stuff.
He got stuff out of the dump. He fixed it up.
Yeah, but also largely he was in management. By the time he got to management, you make good money.
Yeah.
You make like six figures. Especially back in the 80s, that was good money.
Especially when you hide bodies.
Oh, hey. There's nothing wrong with the New York City Sanitation Department. I think that they want an efficient system.
Well, speaking of bodies, at 6:30 p.m. on November 13th, 1974, the patrons of Henry's Bar in Amityville, New York, were alerted to Ronnie Butch DeFeo Jr. yelling, "You gotta help me! I think my mom and dad were shot!"
It's still one of my favorite act-outs I got to do.
Yeah.
Of him coming in and fighting all the men, because when we did the original series, and he comes in being like, "You gotta help me!" And then it was like all the guys trying to help him park, and there's all the Long Island idiots. Long Island is a special, special dumb place. You know, Rob.
Yeah.
I love Long Island. Long Island, for me, from being from Queens, Long Island was like the Hamptons.
Yeah.
Like, to me, Long Island
was... The Hamptons are in Long Island.
Technically, I know. Yeah. But don't tell people in the Hamptons.
Actually, me and Carolina, like when we finally like bought a car, like after COVID, we would go out to Long Island because that's where the good grocery stores are.
That's what's fancy. Yeah. That's where it was fancy.
Yeah, but
now I know it was not. Now I know it's just a working class neighborhood.
Yeah, very
much. That was a correction I'll give immediately. We said the Amityville house was in an affluent neighborhood. And I think that was because we were really, really, really broke
when
we did the episode. And now we're not as broke.
Well, it was an expensive house.
Bedrooms.
It's got a boathouse.
I went in like 2022. I thought it was a super nice neighborhood.
I got a lot of shade on it. I think it's because Long Island, everybody has a different, everybody gets to fight.
If they all fight. Is a boathouse, it's Nice.
But I think in Long Island,
it's a nice neighborhood.
It is a nice neighborhood.
Yeah, it's nice. Now, thank you for coming in, Rob, saying that it's nice.
He's a Long Island expert.
I've been there several times.
Yes.
And it's nice?
It's very nice.
All right. It's nice.
Has the Long Island Medium ever been to the Amityville house?
Actually, it's a really good question. Continue on. I'm going to look it up.
All right. Well, the funny thing about him coming in and saying, like, you got to help me, everyone help me, is he came in like panting, like he just run from his house.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, all right, great, let's go outside. And he's parked right in front of the bar. So he sat out in front of the bar, psyching himself up, and like, okay, how's it gonna look? I need to look as panicked as possible.
Yeah.
So immediately under suspicion. And so he asked everybody to help, come help him. Five guys he brought to his home, and they, of course, discovered that Ronnie DeFeo's entire family was dead. They said they were overwhelmed by the stench of death as they reached the second floor because everyone had been dead for a couple of days. They fucking turned on the light switch, immediately found Ronnie Sr. and Luis dead in their bed. Ronnie Sr. had a gunshot wound in the center of his back. Luis was face down. They were both shot twice. Luis was positioned where her chest was slightly raised. The medical examiner believed she may have been alive for several minutes after being shot, and her position indicated she may have been awoken, raised her body, and looked toward the killer before she died.
Well, according to this is the only answer I got from the Long Island Medium visiting the Amityville, said mostly about her having dinner. And so I'm hearing here, according to her, this is before you go, I just want to read this statement from her, which I love. People ask me that question all the time when I'm over for dinner. Are you getting anything from my house? But 9 times out of 10, it's just their loved ones that they are feeling. I have a cousin that passed away and he was a plumber. So when my toilet runs randomly, I know it's him. But sometimes it is more than that. I walked into a home and all I saw at first was a white light, a flash of blood on the walls, and a priest standing in the corner. I asked about the history of the home, and it turned out that there had been a murder and a suicide there. But the house had been blessed by a priest. It was a beautiful home. It was full of positive energy. It's not haunted.
Wait, so she said that even though it was blessed, she still saw the blood stain.
Yeah, and then, the massacre. Yeah.
Yeah, the massacre. And she saw the priest too.
Yeah.
So what did it, so the priest, all the priest did was add to the haunting.
Yes. But it's nice. It's a comforting presence. I just love to see him. I love a collar.
My God, you know, they had the shag carpeting in there, which I think is sometimes trashy, but when it's white, if you can keep it clean.
If you could just get the damn, these animals, these kids' animals coming in here. Yeah, that's why I got the plastic sheeting on them. This plastic sheeting on the floor. This plastic sheeting over the television. I got plastic sheeting over all the plants. I got plastic sheeting over the lamp.
He said, nice.
Did you have plastic sheeting on the lamps?
No, but my grandmother had a bunch of plastic sheeting on a bunch of stuff.
It was the plastic sheeting was on the lamps. There was a plastic cube over the television. And I don't know what, it's not like we were a bunch of elephant seals.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what she thought we were going to do to the surface of the television. It was in a glass cube in the middle of the living room.
Wait, so you had to watch TV through a sheet of plastic?
There was like an encasement. It was in this like thing, but I just remember.
The screen was not obscured by the plastic.
No,
though.
But the thing, the top of it was, it was in this plastic hutch. And there was plastic on the couch, and there was literally plastic on the carpet.
There was plastic on everything in those houses.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It
had to be pristine.
And all the closets were filled with mothballs.
Yes, and it was, nothing was used. It was good plates that couldn't be used because we weren't
good
enough.
There were full rooms you weren't allowed in.
Couldn't go into them. My grandmother had a room we weren't allowed to enter because just of my fat legs, just my shitty little mouth would ruin that place.
Yeah, and all those houses, they also have like a room before you even get in the house.
The ante room.
Yeah.
My God, I'm so glad I grew up in dirt.
It's just different.
Just thinking back on just like how fucking filled our houses were with like sand and dirt.
My
and dust.
Mom and grandmother would happily have vacuumed me every morning. They would have happily have honestly cleaned my very body inch by inch.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, not the dick. I mean, I got hosed off plenty.
Yeah.
That's different. Oh, we weren't hosed. We were threatened with the hose.
I've been hosed off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it's great.
It's covered in ants. Yeah, <that's different.
laughs> So they discovered Ronnie's parents upstairs, dead, gunshot wound.
Honestly, how would you even know if a Long Island father was planning to kill the whole family if the whole place was covered in plastic? It already is.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Right?
That's why they do it. Just in case they kill their family.
What, is he going to blow a guy's brains out with a knife?
So they go into the boys' bedroom. They found the bodies of 9 and 12-year-old John and Mark DeFeo. That's Ronnie DeFeo's brothers. Mm-hmm. They're both lying face down with a single bullet shot wound. And the reason why I'm going through all of the, you know, where everybody was found and how they were found, it's very much germane to the arguments that are made later on as to who perpetrated these crimes and who all was involved in these crimes.
Yeah.
So those boys were both killed at close range. And then they found the two girls. They found Allison and Dawn. They were both found face down in their bed. Allison, 13, was once shot in the face. Bullet entered the left cheek, moved into her right ear, tore through her brain. The bullet exited, ripped through the mattress, hit the wall, and ricocheted on the floor. Dawn, 18, was shot in the back of the neck. Bullet entered below her left ear and blasted through the left temple onto the pillow. Left side of her face collapsed, and brain particles and blood saturated the pillow. And so they walk in. Everybody is dead in their beds.
Yeah.
And they've all been killed the same night.
Yes. And he goes, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Who could have? Oh, it's me.
Yeah. But, all right, I have a question. How do you execute six people and no one gets out of bed?
And that's been...
Demons? It's a demon.
Yeah. And that's been the question behind the Ronnie DeFeo murders for, you know, going on almost 50 years now.
But do you understand how often it happens in family annihilations? It actually happens way, way more often than you think. And partially, I was reading about this because I wanted to know, because recently I read this horrific story about a British multimillionaire who, you know, obviously fucked everything up, had, you know, was embezzling, all this very standard, was about to lose everything. They all knew it was all coming crashing down. And so he killed his wife and his daughter. And then what he did was that he parked an RV in the driveway to the mansion where you'd have to come in so that the people couldn't come in. And then what he did is he shot all the animals, he shot all the horses, he shot all everything else that lived on the entire thing. He set the whole place on fire. And then he said they burned down a hellacious inferno. Everybody died inside. Same thing. The kids were shot and then one didn't hear and the other one were, it was like not far from each other. And they talk about, they believe there's a phenomena of something being so far outside of what you experience. Like when you ask a person that has never heard a gunshot what a gunshot sounds like, they say a bunch of different things. They see stuff on movies. That's not what a gun really sounds like. A gun kind of sounds like a clap.
Yeah, right? Like a little crack.
Yeah, it's
and it also depends on the type of gun. Like, it was a Marlin rifle.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you don't know the sound and you've never thought that this would be something that was something that you would ever experience, you'd actually be very surprised how much just you need your brain, the very brain itself, trying to keep the status quo of your reality together and intact, even when you're asleep, that you might ignore something like that because it's so far outside. It's how people like accidentally sleep while their house sets on fire and stuff like that. It's because there's all of these, you're not expecting it.
Yeah.
So you don't even think of that it's going to happen to you. And so it's like, you kind of don't see it.
And it also could be, you know, your super mean drug addict brother, you know, you hear a noise, you're like, hey, what was that? And you hear your fucking super mean brother go back to sleep.
Yeah. And you're all right.
And then you go back to sleep.
Cause you're a little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for Dawn, of course, but we'll get to Dawn later.
Live from your grave.
And the thing is, as far as motive goes, you know, everyone knew, like, Ronnie DeFeo Sr., physically and mentally abusive towards his entire family. Butch kind of inherited that temper. They had altercations throughout his life. Then Butch started abusing both acid and heroin at the same time. And it said that just finally one day Butch decided to kill everybody. You know, nobody really knows what, like, Butch himself has given multiple explanations as far as why he killed everybody in the house.
Yeah.
He has said that it was a mob hit, that it was some sort of like...
Well, they were connected, the family, right?
The family was super connected.
Yeah, dude. Fucking, he was a weirdo.
Yeah. Well, so as far as how Butch started off, like he told police he was home from work with an upset stomach the day before. He stayed up late watching a Burt Lancaster movie. I don't know which movie it would have been, though. But do you know much about Burt Lancaster?
I'm going to tell you one thing. I got to tell you, because I only have it because of Dana Carvey's impression of Burt Lancaster. Yeah.
I know he was in a movie called Atlantic City.
Okay.
Which hadn't come out yet, so he didn't watch that.
All right.
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you straight.
Well, he said that he fell asleep in the TV room by around 2 a.m., woke up around 4 a.m. with stomach pains, saw his brother's wheelchair outside of the bathroom. His brother had just broken his leg, so he's in a wheelchair. And Butch heard the toilet flush, and the next morning he decided to go back to work. After work, he saw his girlfriend and some of his friends. He was complaining throughout November 13th to his girlfriend and friends that he was unable to get a hold of his parents, so he's kind of setting an alibi there.
Yeah.
Cars are in the garage, but no one's answering the phone, and so he was taken to the police station for his own protection because he suggested to the police at first, like, hey, you know, not for nothing, but my family pissed off this mafia hitman named Louis Fellini. Maybe you ought to go look into Louis Fellini. I might be in trouble here. I might be in danger.
You gotta have to come up with a better fake mafioso name than Louis Fellini. I feel like it's like, it's essentially called him Theo Spaghetti. Like, that is a very, it is a racist name.
Well, no, these were people. Real people.
Yeah.
Louis Philippe.
Yeah, he made AmeriCord.
Yeah, I know. Well, so is but also I find that I forget though, being from Queens, the kids I grew up with were like Anthony Amoretti, Bobby Barbarisi. Like, I miss those names.
Yeah. Well, Fellini and his family were family friends. They lived with the DeFeos for some time after their home in Brooklyn burned down. And Fellini buried a box of money and jewels in the DeFeo home. Apparently, Butch got into an argument with Fellini after Fellini criticized a paint job that Butch did for him. Butch threw a paintbrush at Fellini, broke a window, and called him a cocksucker.
Whoa, that's how you get whacked.
Yes, and Ronald Sr. is like, hey, that's a professional hitman. You don't want to be fucking with that guy. And Ronald Sr. complained 2 weeks before the murders that he lost a friend, that he had to tell Fellini that Ronald would murder Fellini's entire family if something happened to Butch, and, you know, so on and so forth.
Bada bing, bada
boom. All of a sudden, you know,
we're shooting the kids, you know, the guy, he's getting shot, and you know, the guy, he's yelling at everybody at the bar.
And Butch admitted, like, he's on probation. He admitted he was a heroin user. He said, yeah, I burglarized neighbors' houses and I steal antiques. When they asked him how he passed his drug test, he admitted, like, my sister used to piss in a bag and I'd take that. Mm. And so basically the police are just kind of softening him up. They see immediately, like, oh, this guy killed his entire family.
Yeah.
But they're just trying to soften him up, trying to just admit to, like, one thing and then the next thing and then the next thing. And then finally he was like, yeah, if I'm telling you all this stuff, I may as well be honest. Yeah, I murdered my family. It was me. I murdered everybody. They said that...
Killed them all, of course.
Killed them all.
Killed them all, of course.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, we're good. No, I've been doing it,
Bob.
Like, with Carolina, like, all the... Hi, it's Bob.
It's Bob.
No, I couldn't see who could write something like that. All right, but well, before Butch finally did come out and say, like, all right, I killed my family, he kept telling police, like, look for Fellini. Look for Fellini. And Butch, at the same time, he would start to, you know, he would say his mother was a lousy cook. He'd say his brothers were fucking pigs.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he was not a nice guy. He wasn't a good brother.
No. Called his sister a fat fuck who played her music too loud.
Just no, it's not a good reason to kill your sister.
Yeah. And when they told Butch they found the murder weapon and the bullets, 35 Marlin rifle, Butch said that Fellini had an accomplice who forced Butch to watch as he murdered his family. So it's the story just keeps changing, keeps evolving.
Yeah.
And they asked if Fellini forced Butch to participate. Butch put his head in his hands, asked for a minute, and then confessed to murdering his entire family. And of course, immediately after, Butch's attorney mounted an insanity defense, claiming that DeFeo heard voices who told him that his family was against him, that he was possessed, and he claimed that he killed them in self-defense because the demons were telling him that they were going to hurt him. And that was around the time that this attorney got a hold of the Lutz family.
Now, this is when the story was concocted, which is, it is interesting, because the Lutz family, they were also strange. They were very religious. I believe that he had, like, didn't he, George
Lutz? Well, he was way into the occult.
Well, that was the kind of, it started with that. He got really, George Lutz was kind of, he's a very weird man.
Yeah.
Because
he was really into, like, transcendental meditation and mantra chanting and shit like that.
But he had a Christian stripe. It's a very 80s New York version of religion that my mom had, too, where it was, like, she had a lot of Christian iconography mixed into, like, weird Wiccan stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all chanting the name. Because what George DeFay, or what George Lutz used to do is, like, he would sit and, like, chant, like, find demon names and, like, chant demon names over and over again.
I mean, I take that with a grain of salt, because I think that what he actually did was stuff that, like, my, one of my best friends, Jeff Nitzberg, his dad was what they called a Jubu, which is Jewish Buddhist, and he went full on into Buddhism. And
that's
then
fun.
Like,
I never heard that.
It kind of honestly made him an asshole, because he started believing that nothing existed. So then he would say stuff like, why are you guys making art and movies? Because it doesn't matter, because life isn't real and stuff like that. Yeah. It was rough.
That's too Buddhist.
Yeah, too Buddhist.
That's too boo.
Yeah. Also seems to be just a weird interpretation. From my study of Buddhism, it seems to be like a weird interpretation of it and just an excuse. He doesn't sound like a Buddhist. He sounds like a nihilist.
He was just...
Yeah.
Yes.
He was using Buddhism as a reason he was poor.
Yeah, a weapon against... You know, he was very rich, actually. He did very, very well. Yes. He was using it to attack his children and his children's friends.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he had gotten all these mantras. That's what he would do. So he would go and do his meditation all day.
Yeah.
So he'd go in the other room, you just hear like, hum, 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 from the other room. So I could see George Lutz doing that and everyone being like, he's an occult master. Meanwhile, like, all he did was go to one weird thing in Queens. Like, he saw some guy, some guy taught him how to meditate.
They're all into it in the Northeast. You know, my whole Catholic family, the Catholic side, not the Jewish side, is super into ghosts.
All the Catholic shit.
They get mediums to come by the house all the time and stuff like that.
Catholicism is a very much a fucking slippery slope to the occult.
Yeah.
Because it is the occult.
Yeah, it really is.
It's a fucking grimoire. We talked about this when we did it. You do a Catholic exorcism, you arrive with the spell book, and you have all the accoutrement, and you're doing spells.
Yeah, you have an outfit.
Yes.
Yeah, you've got your special, like, you know, you have your holy water, which might as, you know, your alchemist's fucking pouch.
Tools.
Yeah. You know, like, it's all the same shit. It's all the same occult trappings.
Yes.
They all use the same thing.
But I feel it's a slippery slope, but that's where it kind of started. He had this kind of fascination with the occult. Now, where did they say the actual phenomena began?
Well, they say that it actually began as soon as they moved in.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that Father Ray heard the deep voice saying, get out, And then when closing the window after the blessing, the eldest Lutz boy had his hand crushed in the windowsill. Like, the windowsill came down and crushed the boy. And then, you know, and then they started experiencing strange phenomena. The daughter, Missy, she had an imaginary friend. They called it a mysterious pig friend named Jody.
I love ghost pig.
Yeah.
We love ghost pigs.
We love ghost pigs, yeah. Yes. And, you know, the ghost pig spoke to her and told her of a little boy who lived in the house and met a brutal death, you know, so on and so forth. You know, they had all sorts of shit where there's, you know, they said a ceramic lion bit George on the calf. Doors and windows would open and close randomly. The boys' beds moved on their own, you know. And then after 28 days in the home, you know, very famously, they left with no more than the shirts on their backs. They ran out of the house. And as it turned out, all this was, of course, bullshit. We talked about this recently on the Warrens, and this is partly why we're talking about this, is because we did just recently cover, you know, Amityville partly on the Warrens, and we can kind of expand a little bit more on what George Lutz did afterwards. Afterwards, he went out and recorded a series of 26 cassette tapes talking about what happened while they were in the house. He was drinking most of the time when he was recording, and he reportedly wanted to have seances in the house, and by February of 1976... the Lutzes were caught. But before all that, before he started recording shit, like less than a month after they ran out of the house, they were in contact with Butch DeFeo's defense attorney, William Weber. And he wanted to combine their stories to create a insanity plea.
Yeah.
You know, and to make a lot of money in the process.
Because they're setting up for the fucking, the sale of the story of the haunting of the Amityville house.
Yeah. And because that's the thing is, I do believe that the Lutzes experienced something. Like, something happened in that house.
I mean, yeah, six people were fucking brutally murdered.
Yeah, I mean, it's got
bad juju.
Yeah, it's got bad vibes,
We talked about this recently when we did the Herb Baumeister series, about how, like, it's one of those places that if there were going to be a place where there was going to be paranormal activity, would be here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't want to skip ahead too much, but no one else has felt paranormal shit in the house since.
No. Everyone who's ever lived there. And they also, they refuted a lot of George Lutz's claims where he said, like, you know, window shutters would fly off the walls, doors would fly off the walls, and there's, like, every single thing in here looks original. None of this was, you know, this door looks like it's been here on these hinges for 20 years. None of that shit happened.
And I also think when it comes to paranormal activity, we could look to, we talked a little bit about the lead poisoning, how lead poisoning in the boomers is probably what led to the serial killer, like, fucking epidemic of the 1970s. We're pretty certain.
And 80s and 90s.
It's got something to do with lead poisoning. I actually blame a lot of paranormal stories from this time period on the goddamn Exorcist. Because they look at immediately, the Exorcist happened in 1973. So once the Exorcist, that's when that came out. The Amityville murders happened in 74, and everything happened after the fact. So as soon as they saw this, it was already still Exorcist fever. Like, technically, when technically, I believe the Oscars had just happened, which I believe The Exorcist was nominated.
Nominated for Best Picture.
And so it got a huge amount of attention.
Yeah.
And
so Demons Made Me Do It was pretty popular.
Sounded like it was going to make some money.
Yeah.
But also, it's like, I mean, obviously these people have no moral compass, but, you know, as much as you want to, like, sell your new house that you probably, you know, needed to unload because you couldn't afford to buy it in the first place.
Yes. That is what happened with Lutz.
Yeah,
that is,
right?
That's what happened.
That's what it seems like to
me. Yes. It is utterly, you are sort of jumping ahead, but yes, he completely destroyed his finances and the house was like three times upside down.
Yeah, but in order to do that, you have to free a six-time murderer.
Yes. But you see, as we noticed, sometimes you got to go all the way to the top to make it all work out.
Well, I mean, the kids who were a part of the Amityville story, a couple of them have come out and spoken publicly, specifically Christopher Lutz, who changed his name to Christopher Quarantino, which is a fun name.
Christopher Quarantino?
Christopher Quarantino.
What?
Yeah. I think it's Quarantino was the name of his mother's first husband.
Oh, okay. It's a real name.
Yeah, Quarantino. It was the, yeah.
It sounds like an Italian special during COVID. It's like,
come on up to Maria, isn't it? The Quarantino.
You stand at 6 feet over there. I throw a carazone and I open a mouth. Don't you cough. Don't you cough. You don't make a mistake. Really fun stuff. Really top tier material for me today.
Quarantino special is nice.
But yeah, this guy, he changed his name for anonymity, but it said that he took a lot of flack when he was a kid, you know, because everyone's like, your mom's a liar, your dad's a liar, all this stuff is bullshit.
Yeah.
But this all happened to him when he was 7 years old, which is kind of interesting.
Yes.
Because the age is very interesting because, I don't know about you guys, but my memory from when I was seven is hazy, to say the least.
Well, yeah. I remember my seventh birthday because that's the story I had from when Michelangelo came. And then
from the Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, and Michelangelo came to my seventh birthday party.
It's not real, Henry. I'm sorry.
I know. Why not like this? Oh, I know. Yeah. I know. But thing that was more remarkable about it was that I'll always remember because, like, I grew up in New York. I had a fairly diverse group of friends. And we're all, like, kind of careful. I remember first, like,
one was even a Ninja Turtle.
Yeah, one was even a Ninja Turtle. But then Michelangelo showed up, and April O'Neil, that was accompanying Michelangelo, was being portrayed by a black woman. And we were all, like, really confused as kids. And it really created this very interesting conversation about colorblind casting and race, where she had just trying to explain, because, like, all these kids are like, excuse me, ma'am, April O'Neil's white. And she was like, literally, you got to understand, see, sometimes April O'Neil can be black. Like, she was like saying this stuff. And we're all like,
did she have red hair?
What?
Did she have red hair?
No. But we were just like, but we just went with it. They taught us karate, and those are the last thing I remember.
At least?
Yes.
Okay. She's wearing, God, as long as she's wearing
she
the
had
costume.
The costume. Yeah, she had the costume on.
Yeah. And then she didn't show up wearing a pantsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah. She showed up full tits out. It was awesome. Yeah, then she started stripping.
That's amazing.
And she gave all the kids a lap dance. My dad, you'd be crazy what cops used to get.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I remember from being seven.
Well, yeah. I don't remember a whole lot. I remember being paddled by my teacher at seven.
Yeah, I was
interested. Was deserve it?
I mouthed off. I mouthed off a lot when I was a kid, and I got paddled a lot as a result because I had a big mouth.
Wow. Do you think it made your butt big?
Stronger.
Is that why my butt's big? Is because when I was a kid, I got paddled a lot, and my body, in order to protect itself, made my butt bigger. Yeah, that's probably it. You fucking idiot.
Yeah.
That's probably the reason why I got a big butt is because I got paddled a lot when I was a kid because I had a big mouth.
Wow. You know, I was hit by a teacher at seven.
Really?
In second grade.
But was it part of the punishment, or was it like, did she just fly off the handle and smack you?
I dropped my pencil box. She said it was on purpose. I said it wasn't, and she hit me.
Wow.
Like in the face?
She slapped my arm.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. No, I got
Sister
full.
Dolores.
No, okay. That's a nun. That's totally different. Yeah. No, for me, it was a full wooden paddle by a public, like by a government employee.
Oh, yeah. No. It wasn't like that. It was a rash decision.
No, I was celebrated by my school.
No. That's nice.
Everywhere I went.
That's when I got to public school. In private school, they hated me.
Yeah, I could see.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look like a child prisoner. I've seen those pictures. Right? You look like you'd be currently fighting Ukraine.
Oh, my God.
And if you were born in Russia at that time as that child.
Man, the day I found out that I can just kick the shit out of anyone who badmouthed me, it's a great day.
Oh, I bet. Oh, wow. These hands.
See, I kind of found out the opposite, that anyone could kick the shit out of me if I badmouthed them.
Yeah. Yeah, really bad.
I was a really tiny child.
But that's why you become razor quick with your wit. Mm-hmm. And because you see that actually a few barbs are just as well affected as a few well-placed kicks, my friend.
My audience was not that smart. All I had to do was funny voices and impersonate Jim Carrey.
Yeah, it's great.
It worked out.
Somebody stop me. It helps a lot of people from getting beat up.
I remember, I know this is way off topic and we should probably cut it, but I remember I beat up one kid because I was shaking a tree and he's like, hey, don't shake that tree. And I just beat the shit out of him.
Wow. Actually, an incredible lesson.
Actually, the only kid that I like could beat up, but yeah, the one kid that was weaker than me is that he was stomping on ants, and I told him, hey, stop stomping on the ants. He told me to shut up, and I beat the shit out of him.
Hell yeah.
Jesus Christ, I just made him laugh. I just sang songs. And I did impersonations of the teachers.
Oh, no, I did impersonations of the teachers, too. But yeah, no, it's, impersonations were big. Mm. Okay, so back to the defense.
That was quite a side jump.
Live from your grave.
So Christopher, I guess we're back on the Lutzes.
Yeah.
Christopher here. Yeah, a seven-year-old's memory of all this is interesting because, you know, you don't want to tell this guy that he's a liar. Mm-hmm. Of course not.
Yeah.
But memory is very fallible. And when you're a kid dealing with something so insane, especially when your father is kind of insane, too, because,
yes,
you know, George Lutz had a reputation for also being a very abusive person.
Very
physically abusive, very emotionally abusive. And it is kind of freaky when your dad's sitting in a room for hours alone chanting the name of a demon over and over and over again.
Doesn't it set you up maybe great? I mean, I don't know. If he explained what was going on and he was cool about it, maybe it would be awesome. But he's haunted. This kid's haunted. This man is haunted. Yeah. I find it interesting that he... Yes, it's not about what he directly remembers, but also remember, then the narrative, not just is created by your father to you alone in a home, but then it's written into a book, and then it's written, blown out into a movie, and then it's turned into 9 movies, and the story has become so ubiquitous with haunted houses, and the house, your childhood home, is the picture of haunted houses, that eventually, whether or not you like it or not, you've made that memory real. That it's just, there is no way around it. That is how memory works. You tell yourself, your memories are just the stories you tell yourself that you've decided are the way it has ended. Mm-hmm. That is how, you're the final draft of the stories you tell about yourself.
And man. So, imagine being a teenager and seeing that Simpsons episode about your fucking house.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that shit fucks you up. I think it otherizes you. I think it makes you something else. I think you walk around all day saying, like, I'm supposed to be this sort of purveyor of a secret knowledge. I'm supposed to have experienced something that most people don't experience until they die, a touch with the paranormal. But I'm supposed to be that, but I'm fucked. Now,
well, he says he didn't read the Amityville Horror until 1999.
I'm just saying it being everywhere. It's just in the air.
It's in
just
the air.
Everywhere you go. It's
very
the,
much
it's,
your, so.
It's the context with which you arrive everywhere.
But what's most interesting about his story, and this is what I find fascinating about it, is that he read the Amityville, like, he for his whole life was like, yes, like, shit absolutely happened there. Paranormal activity happened there. And he read the Amityville Horror and he was like, that's not how it happened.
Yeah.
He was like, his memories of it were completely different from how it was portrayed in the Amityville Horror. He's like, that's not how it happened at all. He's like, they added some shit and then completely left other things out. He's like, they left out the story of like how our dog almost fucking was almost hung because it was thrown over the fence and it was hanging by its fucking leash and almost choked to death. Like, you know, all these, he's like,
yeah. And whether or not it just jumped because it was freaked out itself, honestly, that's enough for me. Like, what if it just saw something? Because poor that dogs is
actually,
and cats.
That is actually what he said, is that he fucking, the dog was so scared it jumped the fence and fucking choked itself, but they rescued it, thankfully.
Yes, because cats and dogs see they see all the ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and like he said that he saw like a dark human-like figure appearing in his bedroom doorway, didn't see the feet. All this shit is very, very scary to him, but that's what's fucking fascinating, is that there was a paranormal. According to this guy, there was a paranormal story here. Mm-hmm. It's just not the one that they told. It's not the one that Jay Anson told, because I think he had his own narrative in mind. Because George Lutz did record over 20 hours of testimony of like shit that he said happened in the house. But the thing is that through all the lawsuits that came afterwards that we talked about in the Warren series, like including lawsuits that involved his own family members, like George Lutz was forced to say again and again, like, no, most of it was fiction. Most of it was made up.
Wow.
Yes, he had to. It is interesting. But we did it when we just talked about the Warrens. There's so many of these where there's something at the core, which is why we don't trust these stories. It's why we are, as a whole, like both as a society, it feels like we're more, quote unquote, open to it than ever before. But the skeptic side of it, like, I guess it's 'cause cringe, I think, is the term to be too much of a believer. Everybody has to have a foot outside the door to kind of feel cool and good and of normal society. I try to, at least. But,
well, that's how you actually become a believer, is you are a skeptic and you're proved wrong.
But these stories, the problem is that all the lies on top of these stories are what makes people not believe, is that it's all of the monetization. Again, capitalism kind of fucks it up because it takes what is supposed to be this beautiful, like, I don't know. I think it's interesting. Like the way they talk about the haunted house that we covered, where they talked about how they were happy with the ghosts before they left, where they were just, they created a relationship with the poltergeist. I think it was in the Warren series.
It was the Perrone?
Yeah, the Perrone family. Where they knew the ghost and they were fine with it. And there's something about that, but I feel like that used to be way more common, that this type of phenomenon would kind of happen quietly in your home, basically your family.
Basically the end of Beetlejuice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you hear that story a lot where, like, you know, someone will be in the kitchen and, like, the bread flies off the counter and they're like, all right, Jerry, stop it. Yeah. You know, and it's like, and then it stops.
I love shit like that. I love shit like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this guy, Christopher, he says that what he was most frustrated with is that the book, Jay Anson's book, The Amityville Horror, it portrays George Lutz as a victim of the house. It portrays him as, like, this paternal hero. And how Christopher remembered it, what he believed happened is that George Lutz invited a demonic entity into the house. He turned it into this entirely different kind of story where George Lutz was like kind of an occult dabbler who put his hands into some shit that he shouldn't have put his hands into.
Why else would he buy the fucking murder house?
There you go.
There you go. It's, yeah. But also, it's like, but it can't, because it sounds like he was didn't have as much cash as he wanted, and he got a house that for in a great neighborhood, which was huge,
and a good
for
price,
very cheap.
I mean, for very cheap, yeah, 80 grand.
But he still couldn't afford the 80 grand, so.
Yeah, and if you're a big fan of this kind of stuff, you're like, oh, I can get this house, I'll get a story out of it, we'll make a book.
Maybe. Or, or you just want to be in it. I'm one of those. I just want to be in it.
I mean, if he did go into it thinking I could get a book out of this, he would have definitely been like a hell of a businessman. Because
Yeah.
The Amityville Horror was like, it was the first of its kind.
Okay.
Of this shit, you know? Like, there had been, of course, you know,
well,
books.
The Exorcist, but not like that. Yeah,
The Exorcist
was a book.
But I mean, like, nonfiction.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Like a nonfiction book. Like, at that point, the biggest nonfiction... True crime. I mean, the only thing you could maybe compare it to is like In Cold Blood.
Yeah.
You know, which of course was a massive hit. And that had been about 10 years earlier, somewhere around there. So I guess there was some appetite for true crime. But for paranormal stuff, for haunted house stuff, like I don't think there had been something like that before Amityville.
No, it was in terms of that level of because based on a true story style.
Yeah.
So I
with
honestly,
a true crime angle also added to it of like a national news story.
I personally believe that he did not come in there with a plan. Yeah. I don't think that he had. I don't think, as you can see by his finances, I don't think he was much of a planner. And so I think that you just need one little kick, and then everything else happened because it had the goods. You know what I mean? And had the bright bones for the story. And so, yeah, you start to see some weird shit. And then I kick this little ball. It's going to turn into a fucking avalanche real easy because there's a lot of meat here.
What happened to Lutz after all this?
He basically spent the rest of his life in litigation in one way or another. Like, he even sued Christopher at one point. Because he sued his stepson.
A stepson.
Yeah, he sued him in 2003 because he wanted to get a little bit of the Amityville money. He's like, if this is going to be my life, I'm going to make a little bit of money doing it.
Yeah.
He created the domain name AmityvilleHorror.com, but George had trademarked Amityville Horror the year before, and so he sued his stepson in Nevada District Court. Christopher countersued, noting that the trademark concerned a brand name of nonfiction books. But that got George to publicly admit that the books were fiction.
Oh.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. This big fucking got him. But then they settled the suit. Christopher turned over the domain name. But around the same time, Christopher learned that George was workshopping a new movie. And this is, of course, this is very George Lutz. The plot of the movie was that Christopher would be using his name, you know, his likeness, returned to the house years later, became possessed, and killed his father. And of course, Christopher is like, is this very Long Island, Rob? Like, these guys, like, passive-aggressively telling stories about each other?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It sounds like Long Island.
Yeah.
It's sounding more like
Long Island. Where it's like, they get into this fight, and it's like, I'm gonna make a movie about you, in which you're the asshole, and it's like, oh, you're gonna make a movie about me, in which I'm the asshole, I'm gonna fucking take you to court. But then, out of nowhere, MGM announced their remake, the 2005 remake of the Amityville Horror, which I've never seen. I did not know Ryan Reynolds starred in an Amityville Horror remake.
Yes, he did. Yeah. It was before he was everybody's favorite Deadpool. He literally did a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah.
And that's a bad one.
Between Van Wilder and Deadpool?
Yes. I did not like
Green
that.
Green Lantern was fucking awful.
We all know.
Yeah. He did a bunch of garbage in between. You know what? Why did they not get Josh Brolin? I mean, I know you can't just choose, but that would have been great.
I don't know.
That would have been awesome.
I honestly don't know, because the original Brolin, James Brolin, is great.
Yeah.
He's so good because he's scary. He's a very good scary dad.
Oh, yeah. He's got that big head. Yeah.
He's definitely big dad.
He's
big
got
head,
that serious
curly
beard.
Hair.
Oh, yeah. No, you could take a shovel to the face and just start laughing.
Yeah, he's a serious beard. I love it. Well, we really did it. Wow.
Yeah, we really did it.
We brought it back.
But that's it. But to wrap it up, George filed a suit against MGM for libel, claiming that the new movie made him look like a homicidal maniac.
No, wow.
Because in the Ryan Reynolds movie, George Lutz is portrayed as killing his dog with an axe, attacking his son with an axe, building coffins for his wife and children, trying to drown his wife, chasing his wife and children on a roof in a rainstorm.
I mean, you gotta make it better.
Yes. Well, they pumped up the action and they made it evil daddy, and then daddy's like, oh, wasn't that evil?
Mm-hmm. Well, he contends that when he signed the rights in 1979, there wasn't anything that prohibited him from filing defamation in connection with any subsequent movie. The suit was unsuccessful, and on the day that it was settled in 2006... George Lutz fucking died.
Yeah. He should have been happy with the abs they gave
him. That literally is the saddest way to end the ghost story, is that you just become a ghost.
Yes, that you spend your life in litigation and then you become a ghost.
Wow.
And that's it. That's the expansion of the Amityville Horror. And, you know, there's been 10 Amityville Horror movies, the original, and
really?
9. There's been 10.
I didn't know there's been 10.
There's been
I would have guessed 4.
Including...
There was many
TV
sequels.
Films?
Oh, yeah, sequels. Many sequels.
I remember seeing sequels. I didn't know it got to 9.
Well, they're all the remakes. You know, there's been, I think, 2 remakes. And there was supposed to be like Amityville, The Awakening was supposed to be like last decade. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, there's been.
Yeah, dude. And there's been a lot.
Yeah, there's Amityville. Yeah, I forgot Amityville 3D.
Yeah, Amityville 3D I liked.
Yeah, no, let's go through the names to round this whole thing up. There's the Amityville Horror, Amityville 2, The Possession. That's more about Ronnie DeFeo.
Yes. And that's the one the Warrens had their hand in.
Yes. Yeah, actually, the Warrens had their hand in every single one of these. They were
listed as consultants, at least.
There was Amityville 3D. There was Amityville 4, The Evil Escapes. The Amityville Curse. This is my favorite one. Amityville, It's About Time.
It's About Time. And then it's actually just all about clocks.
Yeah. Amityville, A New Generation. Amityville Dollhouse.
Yeah, that's right. I wish. That was the one where there is a dollhouse shaped like the Amityville house that is also haunted.
Yes. Cool. Yeah, that was 1996. I actually remember I fucking forgot. I just totally realized. Yeah, 1996. When I was watching every horrible horror movie that came across pay-per-view because it cost like $2.
Of course.
Yeah. And so, I saw Amityville Dollhouse. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I saw it. I remember that. It's like a blast from the past.
Yeah, man. It's like, it's like at the same time. What was that other Bloodstone? Oh, man.
We should watch these all together.
Yeah, we should watch it. Yes. And then, of course, in 2005, it restarted. And then people just started using the Amityville name. Amityville Haunting, Amityville Asylum, Amityville Death House, Amityville Playhouse, Amityville No Escape, and then Amityville Exorcism. And then finally, in 2017, Amityville The Awakening. And that was the last one.
How does the town Amityville feel about all this?
They love it. They do not. Oh, Kurtwood Smith.
They don't love it.
They don't love it.
Yeah, Kurtwood Smith was in Amityville The Awakening.
Well, there you go.
He's great. No, they don't love it. They don't really enjoy.
No.
No one does. Their name being a byword for haunted house.
It's not celebrated. Unfortunately, as much as I think that everybody gets sick of it. Because you know what it really is, honestly? It's me. It's people like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That arrive in front of your home going, yeah, they killed the girl in this room, and then they killed the wife in this room. Like, from outside me pointing out, being like, her brains are splattered everywhere, and I bet you wanted to do other things to her corpse, but you didn't get a chance to. Over here's where the brothers were shot.
Have you heard of Marvin Heemeyer?
And that's been this episode of Last Update on the Left.
You've been updated, and thank us.
Yes, patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft is where you can watch episodes and hear interviews outside of the podcast. And then LP on the Left is where all our socials are, TikTok and Instagram.
Shit.
LPN.LPN TV, twitch.tv/LPN TV.
We do a lot of stuff,
Marcus.
Listen
to the brighter side, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Last podcast on the left.com for shows. And and they're all there.
So you've been updated. And fuck you.
Come on.
Dude, this is a shout out to Ronnie. Miss you, buddy.
Jennifer Jason Leigh, also in Amityville The Awakening.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
That's a really good gig for her.
Actually, that's pretty good. Thomas Mann, Bella Thorne.
Bella Thorne, is the one with the...
She's attractive.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, yeah.
All right, goodbye. Hail Satan.
Hail game.
Hail Long Island Medium.
McKenna Grace, of course, they got her in there. She plays the creepy little girl in every movie.
She is a very good creepy little girl.
She's a great creepy little girl.
Get out of here, McKenna. We're not paying you.
We enjoy your work, but we're not paying you.
I'm not paying your fucking rate.